You're listening to Elite Athletic Performance.
So, episode number three. Last week we were talking about recovery, overtraining, and lifestyle factors that can affect overtraining. This week, it runs pretty nicely parallel to the topic of central nervous system, central nervous fatigue, and ways to combat central nervous fatigue. So I guess we'll start off with just addressing basically what is the central nervous system. Just, you know, it's very simple.
Well, central nervous system obviously is that which governs all the electrical activity in your body, whether it's voluntary or involuntary, which is related to the autonomic nervous system. That nervous system can be divided into two sections. You have the sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic nervous system. Incidentally, your nerves, the nerves that house the area of your spine that houses the parasympathetic system is based from the neck and the sacral area, and the sympathetic nervous system is basically everything in between. Most people know the sympathetic nervous system as a flight or fright response system, whereas a parasympathetic is when your nervous system goes in the opposite direction, complete relaxation, right? And your body kind of plays between these two aspects of your nervous system, right? Obviously, in training, you want your system to work on a more sympathetic tone. Again, if it's too dominant on that side, it'll cause, improper performance as well. If it's and then the opposite too, that if the nervous system is too relaxed in the parasympathetic mode, you won't have any performance at all. You'll be very fatigued, very lethargic. So your body tries to balance this out. Now, obviously, with training, we impose demands on that system, and that system typically is a sympathetic system. Where your recovery comes in is trying to stimulate the parasympathetic. So if you can't shut down that sympathetic system, you basically can't get into that deep state of relaxation, right? Which is basically, so you have to be able to turn off that system. The goal, obviously, in the warm-up is to turn on that system, right? To make it sympathetic dominant, to bring up the tone. And then once you finish training, you should focus on stuff that will help turn off that system.
And turn on the parasympathetic one?
Yeah, okay. That's right.
What are the actual physical components that actually make up the central nervous system?
Well, obviously you have your brain, you have your spinal cord, you have nerves, you have peripheral nerves, you have nerves that emanate from the spinal cord.
Mm.
But more so, what's more important really is the cerebral spinal fluid as it flows through from the sacrum, through the spinal cord, and up through the brain. That is what you call your primitive nervous system, and that is really what you really want to sort of calm down. If you can calm down that system cycles at a normal resting rate, I think between 12 to 16 cycles per second, and it's palpable. It requires a certain steady hand and a very receptive hand to pick that up. But if you can calm down that system, or minimize any obstruction in the flow of the cerebral spinal fluid, you can get into that deep parasympathetic state, which is like a REM state, right? Mm. But that's basically, and you, obviously within the nerves itself, you have the actual nerve cell, which is, you know, at the basic level, and then you have the connections between nerve cells, which is the synapses, where you have release of acetylcholine neurotransmitters that bridge across from one nerve to the other, communicating. And this is happening, obviously, at a much faster rate.
Mm-hmm.
There's another system here at play, which, you know, we'll talk about it on another date, that's sort of beyond the nervous system itself.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, this stuff is what the nervous system is actually made of, a base structure. But let's just focus on what we need to talk today on the actual nervous system itself.
Yeah, so basically all these physical components are just basically these kind of pathways to send these electrical impulses throughout the body.
So I might want to add to that too, is that you have, when a nerve sort of enters a muscle, you have, it's called a motor neuron, right? And so where the nerve meets the muscle, you have a number of these sort of motor neurons attached to the muscles, and there are sometimes they're sort of congregated in one particular area of the muscle, which are called motor points, which are can be stimulated by electrical impulses as well.
Mm-hmm.
But they're out throughout the cell, they're out throughout the muscle, and they help contract, send an impulse to help then depolarize the membrane of the muscle, and then you have basically a cascade of events that cause the actin and myosin to cross and to link.
And that's called motor neurons, you said?
The motor neuron is where it's the actual nerve that attaches onto the muscle,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's where the main communication occurs between the muscle and the nerve.
Yeah. Okay. And so moving forward, in terms of like the actual central nervous system, before we even get to the central nervous system fatigue, like what are some factors that could affect it, whether it be in the gym or lifestyle patterns and stuff like that?
Last time we talked about lack of sleep, and we could probably do a whole podcast on actually how to get to sleep and how to stay in sleep.
Yeah, we hit some hot topics in terms of
we could definitely go into detail. I think basically what you're looking at is any high intensity workout. So, for example, for a weight training perspective, it would be anything above 80% or 85%.
The one rep max, right?
For me, one rep max. The other aspect too is, which I'm suffering from right now, is basically.
You guys haven't noticed his voice is a little fatigued. he's actually experiencing central nervous fatigue at the moment.
So I did a very hard speed workout. Typically, I would do about 150 to 200 meters of speed. I did close to 500, and I felt I felt good, and I kind of knew I was going to pay the price the next day, and I did. My immune system started shutting down. Became very, very lethargic, very tired. Wasn't thinking straight. I had to basically take off some time. My immune system started reacting, so I had to basically address not only the fatigue, but also the immune system aspect that was affecting, the overall state of my body as well. So it's if I can give you an analogy of central nervous system fatigue, I can sum it up for you. Everybody's got a smartphone. If you were to turn on your smartphone, turn on every app that you have, put it on maximum brightness, and see how long that thing lasts, how long your phone lasts. Now, if you're going to charge that phone, you'll get to the point where basically even when you charge it, you can't even turn it on until basically it passes the red line. Yeah. Then you can actually turn it on and use the phone. But until then, you can't even use it. So that's what I experienced right now. I've drained every bit of energy out of me.
Yeah.
This happened on Monday, so it's to say Saturday. It's taken that long now.
Okay.
And, how I'm dealing with it and all, like, that's kind of how we'll talk about later on. But that's what nervous system fatigue feels like.
Does this put you at a greater risk of getting sick too?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Your first thing that shuts down is your immune system.
Mm.
And that's why you have to sort of really manage that. So after certain workouts, for example, you really want to manage your immune system. I can tell you a quick story. I had a client many years ago, not too far ago, but anyways, I told him he had a PB on a deadlift. So I told him for the next 48, 72 hours, just stay away from public places because your immune system is going to be shut down.
Wow. Okay.
And he didn't listen. saw him on Tuesday. He calls me on Thursday. He says, I can't make it on Friday. And he said, what's wrong? I'm sick. I'm like, did you use hand sanitizer? Did you kind of stay away? He says, nope. I said, all right, no problem. A couple of weeks later, hit another PB. Same thing happened. Cancels. I warned him. I said, just stay away. Just make sure you got some, oil of oregano. Get some, immune boosters, echinacea tea, whatever you want. And same thing happened. The third time he had a PB, this is several weeks later, he had another PB. I said, you know what you have to do? He goes, at that point, he showed up for the following workout on Friday.
And he was good to go. Okay.
He was good to go.
It only took two tries to get
to the game. It took two tries. Sometimes it takes a little time, though.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how it can affect your immune system. And so when you're hitting big numbers, that's one of the things that does happen.
So is it a combination of, like, in terms of working out that can basically cause CNS fatigue? Is it is it just simply high volume or just high intensity or a combination of the both?
It's usually more volume, really. It's the intensity is not a problem. It's the volume that kills you. So, I mean, if I had done, like, two sprints, it would have been nothing. It's high intensity.
Yeah.
But the problem is I did high volume and high intensity.
Together, okay.
So it's volume that's the culprit. So if you did, you know, if you did, like, say, three sets, you know, assuming that prior to doing those three sets, you were in a non-fatigue state. So mm-hmm. let's just address that first. Those three sets wouldn't have affected you. But let's say you did eight sets of, like, singles.
Yeah.
Right? yeah, that's probably going to affect you.
Mm.
Right? So it's the volume that it's the killer. It's not the intensity.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And even like, online, whenever I see different types of training routines, whether it would be for bodybuilding or strength or speed, I see a lot of volume.
Yeah. And, you know, bodybuilding, obviously, the load, you know, a lot of people, you know, you have to factor in now all the shoots that most of the guys you see, you know, they're usually post-contest. So these guys are already jacked as it is. They got pretty vascular.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just using these, they're probably going through for shots. But typically, they won't use really heavy weights. I remember listening to a YouTube, watching one of my heroes is Vince, was it Rich Piana?
Rich Piana, uh-oh.
5%er? I like that guy.
5% for life, goddamn. I like
that guy. Anyways, Rich, one time, one of his YouTube things, he's talking about how he wants to build up his delt, and he just looked like, he took like 20-pound, 30-pound dumbbells, and he said, just work them till you, like, you know, till they burn.
Yeah.
And that's only like 30 pounds. I mean, look at the size of the guy. He could probably handle easily like 60, 70-pound dumbbells. And this guy was doing like 30-pound dumbbells, and he's telling me,
well, he got some synthol in there too, right?
Well, aside from that, but to build mass, muscle mass, there's a certain sweet spot for everybody. But, you know, typically it's between 60 and 70%. If you go past 70%, you're tapping into your nervous system more.
Yeah.
And it's no longer a mass development.
Yeah.
It's basically, it's no longer a mass development. It's more strength development.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so it's going to create density, but it's not going to create
the actual mass, size. The lean mass. Yeah. Okay.
Size, you got to, bottom line, you got to have lightweight reps till the cows come home, and you build up a lot of lactate. Get that pump in there.
Break down those fibers as much as possible.
Yeah, that's what you want. And you can't do that with heavier weights.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Hmm.
So, and every muscle basically responds differently. Talk about that later on, but there's...
Like, for example, if you want to train your calves, the amount of, you know, stimulus that they're going to need opposed to, like, let's say your biceps or something, that would be completely different.
For sure, yeah. And again, it also depends, too, on people's makeup, person's ectomorph, mesomorph, endomorph. These are all factors that have to be taken into consideration. Yeah. Average points, you know... It's something that you sort of have to kind of find a sweet spot for each weight.
So is it like, for example, like if somebody is training and they don't necessarily have a coach to overwatch them, there's definitely going to be, it seems like there has to be an experimental kind of phase for you to kind of find your footing in terms of where's the sweet spot for you in your training.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And this is where you have to, a training log is critical. You can always go back and say, well, you know what, this weight, worked for me really well.
Yeah.
And that's what these bodybuilders do. I mean, they've been training, like, for most of these guys, you know, juice aside and all that, they've been training for like, 6-7 years. They've kind of figured it out through experiment, through maybe talking to other people.
Yeah.
You know, hey, this is, and then they'll play around with it with them, you know, play around with those loads or whatever routines, and they'll find a routine that's basically working.
Yeah.
And it'll, at a certain point, it'll stop working and they got to change it up again.
Yeah.
But what they've done over time is sort of build up a arsenal of different routines.
Mm.
And that's what you want to do over time. And it's a process. It takes like, 8-10 years
before there was a podcast called London Reels, a pretty interesting one. They had Dorian Yates on it. I think it was on the second episode where he talks about how he has a book with the workout logs for the past 13 years.
I remember seeing that,
And he said he didn't simply just write down the sets and the amount of volume. He wrote down the types of food that I would have prior to working out, how would I feel for each exercise and based off those sequences, how he would feel, and even post, so, like, the level of detail that these guys would go to log that in.
It's interesting. Most people come to me and they, you know, I want to look at their diet log, so I'll have them do like a, you know, very basic 4-day. But when they get into more detail, I actually want to know what we call a 2-hour response time. So pre and post, or post 2-hour response time. So for example, what kind of symptoms have they had before the meal? And what kind of symptoms have they had after eating that meal 2 hours post? And that'll tell you whether or not that meal that you had was a pretty good meal. Another way of sort of doing it, which is sort of impractical to kind of show you, we do muscle testing on certain food types. So
food types.
Yeah. So for example, sugar, most people, you know, you have in your brain, you have 350 times more receptors for sugar than you have for cocaine. So sugar is actually, you know, if you have sugar in sugarcane form and it's raw form, it's not as, you know, you have a lot of other metabolites or other compounds in there to kind of, you know, go, you know, to go with the sugar, versus when you have refined sugar, that's like, you know, like pharmaceutical grade cocaine. I mean, it's like pure stuff, and your body does not like that, and your body will react to it. So we do muscle testing on certain food types to kind of accelerate that sort of knowledge, or information gathering. But yeah, you can, I mean, there's a lot more to it in setting up a diet in terms of, you know, like, and what Dorian was doing was exactly what I would do, for, you know.
And go to that level of detail to log that
down. And that, like I said, what I do is not for everybody. Some people kind of feel, oh, this is way too much for me. Well, okay, that's, you know, and at the same time, if you're patient with me, I can give you a pretty good idea how your body basically is going to
work. Well, I can even comment on that. Like, like you mentioned, you don't work, it may not work for everybody, but what I realize is that the level, the amount of detail that you will go to, it produces a certain amount of results, as opposed to just, turning a blind eye towards it.
Yeah, those who basically stuck with me, and, you know, everybody's sort of different. I try to apply as much as I can based on the person, but those people have sort of experienced some of the detailed stuff that I do. They get results really quickly.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a matter of basically sometimes taking a week, 2 weeks to kind of suss out how this person ticks.
Yeah.
And once you figure that out, then it's pretty easy then how to get results.
Yeah, based on their mechanics and, like,
exactly. And this all, in that 2 weeks, we're doing, like, some serious assessing to kind of get these. So we're saving you basically a lot of time.
Yeah.
You know, these, a lot of experimental stuff that you probably, and there's always going to be changes in your program to a certain degree, but if I can cover about 80% of that for you, that's a huge game changer. I mean, you don't have to wait, you know, several years to figure that out. They can tell you within 2 weeks. Yeah.
And I kind of want to touch upon your numbers, because people are probably listening to this and they don't, they're still trying to figure out who you exactly are, but I remember specific stories that you told me, like, when I think you were doing some weightlifting, and at a body weight at 150 pounds, you did a close to a 600 pound squat.
Yeah, I did a 595 for three reps.
595 for three reps at 150 pounds.
155.
That's a ridiculous ratio. Like, you don't usually see that often.
That took 8 years, though.
There you go. That's coming back to the whole idea of logging and the amount of detail that you'd go into.
That was an 8-year plan. Basically, we only trained strength 3 months of the year.
Yeah.
Rest of the time, it was between 60 and 70%, if not lower.
Yeah. And even coming back to that, like, you're basically 50 now, right?
Yeah.
That's your age.
Yeah.
Personally, me seeing this guy at the Banya, at the, where we're doing some recovery work, seeing the man's physique, he, let's be honest, like, from my perspective, like, I, you know, I'm pretty aware of the fitness industry and such. He has a better physique than most 18-year-olds, and he's fully natural. So basically what I'm trying to make a point here is that the amount of detail that the man is basically trying to go through, it produces a certain amount of results. There's a reason why he's investing this amount of time and effort to produce a certain amount of results, and it's, you know, it's not mediocre.
Yeah, I mean, right now I'm trying to, you have to understand, many years I've done a lot of biking, so my lower half of my body has been very well
developed. He basically has tree trunks for legs, but, you know.
Yeah, but... You know, so the upper body, basically, I'm trying to get that because I need that for my sprinting.
Yeah.
And so I'm developing that slowly. But again, it's I have a plan. I have a long-term plan of where I want to get to. I'm not in a rush. I don't want a six-week plan. It's going to get me, like, you know, and then basically have to pay the price. So you have to factor in, you know, certain types of development for certain tissues. Also factor in, you know, the amount of time you have available to train,
yeah,
sleep, all these factors then basically can, you know, either slow your progress or accelerate your progress.
Mm-hmm. And even in terms of balance too, because I remember you looked at my training, you say it's not balanced. Like you'd be hitting certain body parts that are actually overpowering other type of body parts, you know what I mean?
Exactly, yeah.
So, and that causes imbalances, which can then basically put you in a better situation to get injured.
Exactly. So one of the things we'll talk about later on is what I've coined three phases of development. The first phase is what we call structural fitness. The second phase is structural performance. And the third phase is performance conditioning. Most people, I would say 99% of the people, come into that door, the third door.
The third door. Can you just put the third door again?
What we call performance conditioning.
Performance conditioning.
So, you know, give you an example, you know, some people come here, they want to learn how to do a squat or something like that. And I'm looking at them and I'm thinking, there's no way this guy's going to do a squat.
Your mechanics are just off.
Yeah, mechanics. So I got to take this guy back. How far back I take him
depends
on how much gravity you want to expose to them. So structural fitness involves any exercise that did not involve a lot of gravity, did not engage the body in a lot of what we call axial loading, which is basically compressive loading. Structural performance, we're entertaining a little bit of that, but we're trying to build a structure to go counter to that. So if I'm going to put a load on you, your body tries to do the opposite, trying to, you know, go the opposite way. If the load is trying to crush you, it's trying to do the opposite way.
So you
have to build a certain amount of tolerance for that structure. And so there's certain ratios we look at in terms of certain muscle groups.
Mm.
As long as you have these ratios, it then tells me, okay, you know what? I can move you to the next level, which is I can teach you how to do, let's say, a deadlift. And from a deadlift, you get to a certain number, I'll teach you how to do a front squat.
Yeah.
A front squat, I'll teach you how to do a good morning. From a good morning, then I'll start teaching you how to do a back squat. So back squat, and then obviously beyond that requires now looking at you know, Olympic movements like snatches, cleans, that sort of stuff.
I think people have to realize that the content that we're providing is not your typical surface level 4 to 6 week type of training program, where the amount of depth that you go to is a lot more than, you know, what's out there usually. Moving back to the central nervous system, what are some symptoms of like central nervous fatigue? I think I remember it was there was eye twitching, there was muscle you described the muscles as being like rocks, you know.
Right. So some of the symptoms basically would be inability to concentrate. So like today I'm not bad, but if you'd have caught me like a couple of days ago, I remember somebody called me, one of my clients, he called me. I'm like, listen, I really can't talk too much today. My brain is that, you know, your brain is, you know, can't quite focus on a thought.
Yeah.
The other thing too is the eyelid twitches, as you mentioned, and muscle cramps, right?
Muscle spasms too.
Muscle twitches. Also, you know, on the blog article we have here, you know, why your muscles are slow. You know, I guess what was the title again? Thing was like, why do many athletes train despite having muscles like rocks? The muscles become over. There's too much tone. There's too much sympathetic tone on the muscles, so the muscle becomes very hard, which is good in some ways. Like, you know, like, you know, if you want to before a contest, for example, or you're going to a beach, you don't want to impress the chicks there.
Mm.
You want things to look. But the problem is once you stop that, right, they should become flaccid.
Mm-hmm.
And a good sign of your nervous system is ability for you to maintain that flaccidness in the muscles. The more supple the muscles are, you know, obviously there's a certain level, but you know, it's a qualitative thing I'd have to kind of, you know, show you to experience it.
Mm-hmm.
But you want a certain amount of suppleness and you want a certain amount of hardness.
So think of like your muscles in terms of them performing very well as like elastics kind of.
Yeah, the other thing you'll get is a lot of mouth sores. So if you get sores in your lips or inside your mouth, you'll start getting a sore throat. So these are where any emunctuaries are. Emunctuaries are basically openings of a body. So like your eyes, your nose, your mouth, you know, your number one, number two, right? Your skin. So typically you'd get them in. So, you know, I tell people, like, if you want to rub your eyes, like use a cloth or use a sleeve or something, but never use your fingers, because that's the first place. I mean, you know, any contact, any bacteria is going to make contact with the mucous membranes, and you'll more likely, if your immune system is already shut down a bit, more likely you're going to get sick or basically start getting an infection. So the same thing with mouths, mouth sores. I tell people when they start training with a lot of weights or doing a lot of speed work, start using oil of oregano in their toothbrush and to sterilize their toothbrush. So soak the toothbrush in rubbing alcohol, right, and then rinse it out, and then use oil of oregano and grapefruit seed extract, and brush your teeth with that because it's a very powerful antiviral, and it'll get in between. And if you use a brush called a sulca brush, if you can remember that, it's a very good toothbrush. It actually gets underneath the gums. And that's where a lot of bacteria house themselves. And so if you can get rid of that, so oral hygiene is a real big factor when you start training, actually. A lot of people underlook it. But I look, it's a very important factor. It's the first place you're going to get an infection, right? Either lips or your mouth or your throat. So,
and we also mentioned just basically feeling overall drained during the day too, right? That's a pretty good sign that you may be, your central nervous system is shot.
Yeah, muscle cramping, right, is another good sign. Yeah. And the other thing would be inability to get into REM sleep. So your sleep is basically, you're tired, but you can't get into that deep state. And that's, so here's another, you know, sort of way to address it. You can use cranial sacral work to help address that, and there's stuff that you can do self-induced, or tools that you can get. This is a kind of toolkit that I give my clients to help teach them how to use.
Could you actually explain what cranial sacral, like that, what that type of work is?
So cranial sacral is the fluid that circulates throughout the brain, and it goes all the way down your spinal canal and down to your sacrum, and the movement of the oscillation of your occiput, which is the base of your skull, and the sacrum, causes like a cantilever mechanism, which is like a pumping mechanism, which then helps move this fluid back and forth, and helps as it creates a pressure gradient. Now, as that pressure gradient moves along the spine, you have lymphatic ducts along your spine, and what happens is now that pressure pushes out old lymphatic fluid and pushes in new lymphatic fluid. So it's another, your brain receives nutrients, not only from the carotid artery, but it also receives the nutrient from the cerebral spinal fluid. So when you have a blockage either in the spinal cord, like a vertebrae being out, or you have a jamming of some of the skull bones, or you can create like a garden hose pinching effect. And so you have this improper flow, which basically means you have decreased nutrients now and bathing the brain and the spinal cord.
Yeah.
And so the idea of this, the therapist would basically, you know, find these blockages or try to open up the garden hose. So basically have this fluid.
To visually kind of describe this to the listeners, it's like you've done this to me, I think, a few times, where basically you're laying down and basically the base of my neck and the back of my head would be in your palms. And I think what people have to realize is that it's very, very detailed type of body work. Like the movements are very, very minimal.
Yeah, it's micro movements. And you almost have to shut off your left brain and let your right brain, it's all about feel. So you try to, you have to basically, you can't assume that the movement's going to go this way. You have to basically just feel where the resistance is and go with the flow.
Yeah.
It's a trained thing. I can, you know, it's something that's, I'm okay at it. I get about 80%. My instructor taught me. He's very good.
He's very good.
Yeah. Mm.
Can we give him a plug? What's his name?
His name is Robert Harris. The Cranial Sacral Center downtown in Toronto. He's a very good gentleman. There's a kit that I give my clients, and part of that kit has some of those things where they can do this on their own.
On their own, okay.
So if they get about 60-70% on their own, that's pretty good. And then whatever's remaining, I mean, I could take care of that.
Yeah. Anything else? So we basically kind of like address like the symptoms of central nervous fatigue, but what can we do now to kind of combat it?
That's a good question. So a couple of things to remember with there's a couple of sort of, I guess, theories out there. One is the production of ammonia. Ammonia basically passes through the blood-brain barrier and then affects nervous transmission of the nervous cells, right? There's the other one, other theory or other possible, I guess, mechanism is the increased production of 5-hydroxytryptamine, which is basically serotonin, I think. And serotonin production increases as you're training and doing high intensity work, and that's basically to shut down this. It helps create like a fatigue state. Your decreases your dopamine levels. Basically, your sleep. You can't. It wants to make you tired. So if you have these two mechanisms, probably some other ones as well. Obviously, the cranial sacral system being attacked as well. All these things put together now create this fatigue state. Now, how do you combat it? Well, there's some research saying that branched chain amino acids have a
pretty good BCAAs.
Yeah, BCAAs yeah. Basically help mitigate 5-HT production in the brain, and basically it prevents buildup of 5-HT in the brain, basically competing for the same, I guess, receptors.
So you would say from your perspective that BCAAs are legit in terms of like supplements?
BCAAs are very legit. Not only from I know a lot of people have looked at it from a muscular standpoint, through, mm-hmm. For muscle building and stuff, but really what you need to look at it from a nervous system perspective, you're actually helping. So part of that, before it even gets down to your muscle, I think most of that BCAAs will, if you're, the pecking order for muscle in terms of protein and nutrients, muscle is really at the bottom of the totem pole. You know, the first is going to be like your brain, spinal cord. The second is going to be visceral organs, right? Or anything that's damaged tissue. And lastly is going to come muscle. So if you take 50 grams of protein, you might get 5-10 grams actually going into the muscle.
Hmm.
So, because everybody else is like, it's competing for that same protein, right?
Yeah.
So BCAAs definitely are a good way. Combining BCAAs with carbohydrates, grape juice or some sort of fast-acting carbohydrates during workout, pre-workout, post-workout, during workouts, is a great way to get it into your system. So it helps raise up the insulin and basically drives the drives that into the muscle, and also probably has some effect into driving it into the brain area as well.
Besides BCAAs, anything else through diet?
Sure. There's other things. There's L-tyrosine, which is a very good amino acid for that. There's L-lysine, works indirectly by helping immune system crashes. There's L-citrulline and L-arginine alpha-ketoglutarate. Alpha-ketoglutarate is also known as AAKG. You can also get alpha-ketoglutarate, right? L-glutamine, right? But those two compounds, L-citrulline and AAKG, help decrease ammonia production, which is really critical. So taking that, let's say, before, during, and maybe after, let's say, a high-intensity workout would be more opportune than, say, if you're taking it, for a muscle-building workout, right? You probably don't need as much, but if you're doing like anything above 80% RM, 1 RM, some of these factors probably, some of these nutrients, you might want to take that into consideration. L-tyrosine is a good one to help, perk up your nervous system without having the, effects of having one of those high energy drinks.
Mm-hmm.
L-lysine is a good one, definitely post-workout. And that will help with the immune system, because usually the immune system is the first thing that kind of shuts down.
Mm.
Once your nervous system shuts down, your immune system's next.
Yeah.
As I figured that out, I'm experiencing that this week.
Yeah. I think a really key important thing that I'm kind of getting from this is that as soon as you start experiencing any type of fatigue, like essential nervous fatigue, you got to cut back right away.
Yeah. There's some other stuff you could take. Obviously, there's chamomile tea. And chamomile tea or matcha green tea, and you have to use a whisk and sort of whisk it up. It's got, matcha green tea has a lot of L-theanine. L-theanine helps calms and relaxes the nervous system. Chamomile too, valerian, hops, Chinese skullcap, I think, is one of the herbs. These are sort of calming herbs that kind of help turn off that nervous system, that sympathetic tone. In terms of electrical devices, there's a basic one that you can get. It's called a microcurrent, and that's based on the science of biological resonance. And biological resonance, we can talk about that in a whole seminar about that. But in a nutshell, you know, all living things resonate, all tissue resonates in a certain frequency. For example, muscle resonates at 46 hertz, nerve 396, ligaments 100. You know, I can, these are ones that I remember right now based on my current state. But what you can do is you can dial in that frequency with the microcurrent unit, and it'll help regenerate the nerves and the nervous system. You actually can dial in parasympathetic nervous system, sympathetic nervous system, or any part of the brain, and it'll help dial in and help regenerate that. And how it works basically is every cell has a piezoelectric effect or electric field. And when it's healthy, that cell is vibrating at that very specific frequency. When it's stressed out, it no longer resonates at that frequency. And so the microcurrent, what it does, it finds that frequency, and it kind of hooks up these little like miniature jumper cables, and it gets the cell, the mitochondrial aspect of the cell, to start to work again. So once the mitochondria starts to work, it starts producing energy, which then helps now, you know, helps the cell clean house and do what it needs to do in terms of repairing itself. There's a portable unit called the AlphaStim, which I use sometimes, and I've been using it. It's, you know, it's funny, this week I haven't been thinking straight because of my fatigue, which kind of, you know, so it kind of, now I'm starting to get my brain back. So I'm trying to use some of my my weapons, if you call it, to help, you know, decrease the nervous system fatigue.
Yeah.
And the AlphaStim has a portable unit, and it's a cranial stimulator. And what it is basically ear clips that you wear with wires that attaches onto a, attaches to a machine, which then you can dial in the machine, and it gives you, very specific current.
Mm.
Another way is auricular therapy. You noticed something today when you came in. You saw me wearing these earrings. They're actually magnetic earrings.
Yeah, he was wearing magnets on his ears. Scientist, this guy.
So the earlobes of everybody has earlobes, and the earlobes reflect the brain basically. And so if you compress, even if you, one of the techniques we use in cranial work is actually we pinch on the earlobes. Even if you use, let's say, clothespins, you know, the old fashioned wooden ones, you know, if you squeeze your earlobes, you put them on there, hopefully not too, the spring's not too hard, but if you let them sit there for a couple of minutes, you can actually feel your system kind of relaxing a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing too is there's a point in the crease of your ear, and it's kind of hard to kind of describe it, but it's called the Shenmin point. And by placing, if you go to 1996 Olympic Games, Donovan Bailey, he had something in his ear. If you look at his ear, and basically that, he had a tack, an acupuncture tack in his ear. And I'm pretty sure that was a Shenmin point. And that Shenmin point there is to relax the system, right? So that would be under auricular therapy. Also, there's also acupressure points that you can, you know, you can look up that, or adrenal or nervous system points. So there's a number of ways you can sort of, address nervous system fatigue, right?
And definitely sleep is definitely one of them as well. But I feel like we have to make a podcast just dedicated to how to actually address your own sleep on that one topic.
Oh, yeah. I think sleep is the biggest underrated sort of regeneration tool that most people...
Yeah.
The problem is to get into sleep sometimes for a lot of people is very difficult. So,
we'll have a separate podcast in terms of how to actually get into them. But yeah, that's central nervous system and central nervous system fatigue and how to address it in a nutshell. All right.
The purpose of this podcast is to educate and to inform. It is no substitute for professional care by a doctor or other qualified medical professionals. This podcast is provided on the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. Instead, we encourage you to discuss your options with a healthcare provider. The podcast is available for private, non-commercial use only. Advertising which is incorporated into, placed in, association with, or targeted towards the content of this podcast is forbidden. You may edit, you may not edit or modify this podcast, but you may redistribute it. Elite Athletic Performance assumes no liability for any of your activities in connection with this podcast or for your use of this podcast in connection with your website, computer, or playing device.